in a systemic way. In today's episode, we have Dr. Yoad Galadri Hakim, who is a clinical psychologist, social activist, and professional supervisor at the Palestinian Counseling Center, and the head of the Arab Psychological Union in Israel, and also an establishing board member of the Palestinian Global Mental Health Network. In today's episode, Julie and I speak with Yoad about the context of her work, her training, and her current practice in Palestine, where we explore narratives around trauma, samud, and hope. This was a really emotional episode and an important conversation with a very inspiring and powerful woman. Julie, is there anything you would like to share about some of your reflections?
I mean, it's hard to know really where to start with sharing some reflections, because I think, as we've said, Cesar, there are so many reflections in there, so many different places we could go. And I think Yoad can speak in so many ways so eloquently about her experiences. I guess she is a woman with incredible energy, is so dedicated to the work that she does and has such passion, and invites us to think about change in new ways. And she invites us into her world and into her experiences in a way that expresses, I suppose, the hope that you talk about, but also the challenges and the difficulties. It's a very personal story, but it's a very important story for the global context and for all of our working contexts as well.
Your words, strength and resistance, really stood out for me. And despite the difficulties of her experiences, while we were even doing the podcast, she was able to really speak so profoundly, professionally, and as you said, passionately, about the very important work she's doing with families and people in Palestine right now. The conversation has lived with me in a way that other conversations haven't, where there's this kind of worry I have for Yoad. We are really interested in people's thoughts on the episode and to continue some of the conversations and to share some of your thoughts on where this episode may have taken you. So please do share with us in any way you can and continue the conversations beyond this format. So we hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome, Yoad Galadri Hakim, to The Systemic Way. It's a real honor and a pleasure to have you join us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you for this important stage to bring my voice, to bring the Palestinian voice internationally. I'm honored. Thank you.
Thank you, Yoad. We really appreciate you giving us your time today to speak.
You know, for us Palestinians, it's very important that our voice being heard. We have been very much marginalized during tens of years. So this stage of yours is very important to me, to us. So my thanks goes to you as well. Shukran.
Thank you. Yeah. Before we kind of really get into talking about your work and the current context, it'd be great just to hear a little bit of an introduction to who you are, really. And if you can maybe just for the listeners, just give a bit of a kind of overview of who you are professionally, personally. I mean, share in any way that you like, just to introduce yourself.
Yes, sure. I'm a Palestinian therapist, clinical psychologist. I had my degrees from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and the Haifa University. Originally, I'm from Nazareth, But I chose to live and practice my career inside occupied Jerusalem. I have been a therapist for 25 years now, working with the Palestinian Counseling Center. I worked as well with Palestinian ministries, organizations, community centers, as well as mental health hospitals, Israeli organizations. Nowadays, I'm pursuing my PhD degree in social work, actually. I decided to study the narratives of trauma and coping of Palestinians dealing with their lost homes, because I believe that our experience as psychologists must combine both research, academic study, and practical experience. And above all, I have a wonderful, beloved family in Nazareth. I'm a wife and a mother for three smart kids, and this is my most important title.
Thank you, Yoad. I wanted to know a little bit about your story and what kind of drew you personally, really, to kind of being a psychologist and working in this field. What were some of those kind of early stories?
Yes. Actually, I'm a daughter of a refugee family. Some of my extended family stayed in Haifa and Nazareth, and the vast majority were kicked out of the country at the war of 1948. And from very early age, I tried to listen very closely to my grandparents' parents and the people around regarding the experiences they had. And now, actually, when I think about it, my name, Yoad, is I was named after the heroine of a novel called The Pissy Optimist. It's a novel about the Palestinian struggle, those Palestinians that remained at their homeland. So Yoad means return. It's the undoubtable belief that we have a homeland, and those who were kicked out will return someday. So from very early age, I think I had this feeling of political commitment, because Yuad is a verb, actually, in Arabic. It means return. It's not a noun. So I, through the years, I thought I had this belief that helping people politically means helping them being a better human beings and fulfill their whole humanity. And doing so is best through mental health. So from very early age, I was driven to mental health and the clinical work. And I believe it's a beautiful way to help people have a say, to help people be resilient, resist, and continue and remain. And this is what I have been doing for more than 25 years now.
Thank you, Yoad. It's so lovely to hear the meaning of your name and how it connects to your work, but also embodied in just who you are in lots of ways. And I know that you've also been part of the Arab Psychological Union and the Palestinian Global Mental Health Network. And it would be really lovely, actually, to hear your role and your involvement with these places, because I'm sure woven into that is the political commitment and mental health aspects that you speak to that are important part of you.
Yeah. Actually, as Palestinian living inside Israel, I have Israeli passport. And you know, Palestinians are very much divided in their homeland. We have Palestinians with Israeli passport. We have Palestinian with Jerusalemi IDs. We have Palestinians with West Bank IDs. We have Palestinians with Gaza IDs. So we are not unified. In terms of the legal system, the Israeli legal system. And during my experience as a Palestinian therapist working in Jerusalem and occupied West Bank, I thought why I can't be part of a union of psychologists operating in Jerusalem or the union of psychologists operating in West Bank. Why do we as Palestinian psychologists comply with this division that the colonizing system make us do? If there are geographical borders, why should we adopt these borders in terms of self-definitions? That's when we thought that it's not right to have an Arab union of psychologists living in Israel, another union of psychologists living in West Bank, and third one in Gaza or Jerusalem, and other in the diaspora, because the colonizing system want to vanish us as one people, as one community. But part of our resilience is to join together. That's when we decided, a group of mental health workers, that we are establishing the Global Palestinian Mental Health Network, in which any Palestinian therapist can be a part of it, regardless of their geographical area. And now we believe this is our answer to the occupation, to the colonization, to this system that wants to divide us. Connectedness is, and networks is our answer. And nowadays, we as Global Palestinian Mental Health Network, we find much in common in our struggle. We can talk, we can exchange information, and we can speak to the world as one unified Palestinian group, not divided according to occupation or colonization ideas.
Thank you, Yoad. So a real act of resistance against some of these kind of the occupation and the lines and the divisions that's created and enforced upon Palestinian therapists. I'm wondering what some of the challenges have been in putting this together, as well as some of the kind of activities of the group. It'd be really nice to hear about some of the stuff that's taking place.
Yes. First, we have challenges as Palestinian therapists. For example, I will start with my own experience while studying in Israeli universities, Israeli academies. I had this challenge of trying to bring, they present us with all the Western ideas and the Western theories about mental health. You know, these Western theories are theories written by or developed by the individualized white man to the middle class white man. And as Palestinian part of a collective community, I found this Western ideas very much strange to my community. I tried to bring all the knowledge I had in the academy and to apply it to our people, but it didn't work. You know, I worked at UNRWA, United Nations for Refugees in the Near East. I worked at Save the Children, international organization. They believed very much with this Western ideas of a pathology of interventions. And during these years, I learned that it doesn't apply to my people. So was the problem in my people or in the theory? That's when I started communicating with my Palestinian colleagues who felt the same alienations as I did. You know, we were each and every one of us was experiencing this alienation from this Western gaze, let's call it, but we were very lonely in our ideas. Then when we started exchanging ideas and information, we started developing our own gaze, our own idea of both pathology and well-being. And it made us feel very much empowered. We now, at the Global Mental Health Network, we very much believe in liberation psychology. We believe that our role as psychologists is not limited to the clinical rooms only. We all practice clinical psychotherapy inside closed rooms, but our voice as therapists must go beyond these closed doors to the community. And we have a mission, we have a goal, we have a role towards our community, empowering our people for liberation, you know, political liberation and self revelation, because usually colonization occupy your inner self. And if you want to be free, you must help people to become free from inside and then outside. And this is very much our role as the psychologists. You know, it's very challenging to work as as Palestinian therapists divided according to the geographical borders, but we insist to do this. We meet sometimes, we use the Zoom, we use the electronic devices, we use any possibility that we can so that we connect.
Yoad, thank you so much. I'm really interested to hear, like, what are some of the practices that you've taken that are more collective, that you feel fit for the communities that you serve and work with? It'd be lovely to hear some of those examples.
Yes. You know, in Palestine, let's start by saying that it's very, very important to read the context. Because Western therapy and Western gaze put the trauma made by colonization aside. They marginalized the context. So we, as a liberational Palestinian psychologist, we start by training ourselves to look very close to the context and to help ourselves and then our patients to understand the effects of this colonization, colonizing context upon their psyche. People sometimes have normal reactions for abnormal suffering, abnormal reality. And we help people to look at this abnormal reality and to read the collective narrative, okay? Mm-hmm. And then to look at its effects upon them. So our interventions are also group interventions towards, we work with small communities, we work with families, we work with organizations, because we believe that the threat is upon our collective selves, and this threat will be transmitted to our individual selves. That's why we focus on the collectiveness of the trauma, a collectiveness of the threat, and the collectiveness of liberation.
Okay, Yoad. When we met previously, you recommended a paper that we read, Subaltern Speak by Spivak, which was a very powerful and emotional paper to read. And I'm interested in actually your thoughts around that paper as a kind of influential paper. And I've got some questions in terms of, well, I've written them down as questions, and it might sound a bit long-winded. But would it be okay to ask something around your kind of connection to that paper and to the kind of Palestinian experience?
Yes. It's a very, very powerful paper. I think the subalterns, of course, they can speak. They always speak. But there is the question remains regarding who is listening and who is collecting their words and how much their words are translated to the to their inner truth. You know, Fanon said that the language of neurosis is never secondary to the language of the political experience, which means that we have to look to have a very deep look to the political experience of people and then to read their neuroses. And Spivak was talking about the inability or questioning the ability of people to represent themselves. I think Palestinians has their narratives for tens of years now. But, you know, knowledge in our world is very much connected to power. And there is a misuse of power. And those who have the power also says and decide what is knowledgeable and what is not. Edward Said, the Palestinian philosopher, I believe, Edward Said, who wrote about Orientalism, how the Western gaze regarding the East. And you know, when Westerns look at the East, he talked about this, the feeling of superiority, that their gaze is the gaze that reflects the reality. But it's not the reality itself. When Western gaze is the only gaze that work, it doesn't capture the voices of indigenous people. We believe that in order to overcome Orientalism, we as Palestinian, we must bring our voices to the international arena. First, to make our voices collective, clear to ourselves, and then to believe that we can represent ourselves the best, okay? And we can contribute not only to our people in regarding mental health. Palestinians' mental health professionals can contribute to the international journey of mental health. Indigenous people can represent themselves the best, okay? We may not have the power nowadays, but we will have it in the near future, inshallah.
You know, can you say a bit more about your thoughts about how kind of some of these Western models and ideas around psychotherapy can perpetuate some of the kind of colonizing discourses that essentially kind of fail to represent Palestinians as a group, you know?
Yes, of course. I can bring an example that when I was working at refugee camps, the international donors, wanted very much, were very much obsessed with the PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis. And we were collecting data from people. And, you know, international community donors wanted the data to reflect PTSD, but the data actually didn't reflect that. We didn't capture the full criteria of PTSD. And then we have a very important, deep discussion among us Palestinians. Do Palestinians have PTSD or do they not? And where's the problem? And that's when we understood that we as Palestinians, we are not yet post. We are not post. We are not the P of the PTSD. Maybe we can say we are CTSD, cumulative trauma, continuous trauma, but we are not, we don't have even the privilege of PTSD. That doesn't mean that Palestinians do not suffer. Palestinians do have, are experiencing a huge suffering because of the continuous occupation, the continuous Nakba making during the 70 and more years. Palestinians do suffer, but they have their own ways of and their symptoms to show this suffering. We inherited generational traumas, but we also inherited narratives of coping. So it's very important that to help the international community not look only on legends of trauma, because it's the, you know, it's the fashion to look at trauma, but also to hear the voices of people and learn about their narratives and legacies of coping. This is one of the most powerful examples that I can think about. Also, whenever they talk about the international gender, talk about personality disorders or talk about affective disorders, all these disorders and DSM, you know, the diagnostical manual makeovers are only very much individualized and they don't look at the context. So as Palestinians, we do experience, of course, depression. But we are like any other community, like any other people in the world. But it's very important to look at the collectiveness of trauma, collectiveness of recovery, the context of occupation and colonization, and very much important not to pathologize people too early so that the Western, you know, Eurocentric gaze feel satisfied. You know, 2/3 of the world's people are not individualistic communities. 2/3 of the people worldwide are collective communities. And we still insist the genre of mental health and psychoanalysis to impose individualized gazes to collective communities and individualized gazes to communities under colonization, which is very much wrong.
And Yoad, within that aspect, when I was listening to you saying that it's not just the trauma, there's also the stories of resilience, and it was making me think of the word samud. And if that fits in that area of that steadfastness and that perseverance.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. People, we don't look at our experience as a two ways of experience. We are not either victims or heroes, you know? And we're not either victims or survivors. We can be both at all times. I think about my parents that although they have been through huge suffering, they still made it. And they helped us to continue our study, to gain our knowledge and to speak. And this is what happening. What is happening to our Palestinian people. They are Samidin. They have the steadfastness. They survive the traumas, but that doesn't mean that traumas must continue. I raise my voice very loudly for the international community to stop this inhuman suffering that Palestinian has been going through for more than 70 years now. Inhuman suffering that any community either can't resist forever. Palestinians do have sumud, and no one will take our livability and hope out of us. You know, when I think about the colonization measures, these are measures and that these are measures targeted to the psyche, the collective and the individual psyche of people. When thousands of Palestinians' homes are demolished inside Jerusalem and West Bank, the colonization system doesn't mean to destroy the house only. They want to destroy the feeling of the belongingness, right? Mm-hmm. Because a house is a site for resistance. A house is a site for dreams. A house is a site of a personal narrative of warmth. And when thousands of houses are being demolished yearly, and you can now see what's happening in Gaza, this is an attack upon the livability of Palestinians. But Palestinians are and will remain, you know, even if someone destroy the house, the feeling of belongingness will not be destroyed. You know, in Jerusalem, we had this very touching groom that decided that at her marriage day, she will hold her marriage party upon the ruins of her house. And she experienced this happened 3 years ago when her family house was destroyed by the Israeli bulldozers. She decided that home is the feeling of home. And she held this marriage party upon the ruins. And she was experiencing all this pride, pain, a feeling of belongingness. And she was holding all the Palestinian narrative in that one moment, that although there are ruins, although there are internal wounds, we continue and we choose life. You know, this groom chose to celebrate, and she was beautiful. She was very beautiful. We were all surrounding her with her beauty, with her hope of a better future. So this continuous attack on our collectiveness will not work, because we have legacies of also coping, and we are trying to help each other as Palestinians to cope.
Yad, thank you for sharing that story. And what a beautiful example of these narratives of coping that you spoke about, and an example of Sumud, isn't it? A kind of a real embodiment of that. And when we were I mean, you kind of introduced the word to us as something to look up, and I was reading about it as something that Palestine, the identity of Palestine, has adopted this concept of Samud.
Please.
I just wanted to give you the space, really, to say more about what that means to you and to Palestinian people, and also the impact or the effect or possibilities it has for your work, you know, your therapeutic work, and this concept and this lens.
Yeah. I'll start with the therapists. As therapists, we understand now that we are not alone. Each and every therapist, Palestinian therapist, is part of a community of therapists. And when you are part of something that is larger, you feel your inner power. Therapists also experience the same suffering as our patients. You know, we are part of the context. As therapists, we are wounded too. I'm doing this podcast with you today while my two kids are locked in Jericho, that I can't get there because it's collective punishment that the Israeli authorities decided. So my two kids are in Jericho and I am elsewhere in Nazareth, and we can't meet. So I have this feeling of pain. I'm part of this abusive context. Me and my family do experience the same abusive context as much as our therapists, but our patients, sorry. But if we stick to our collective narrative and we read the context well, we choose not to respond by helplessness. We always look at hope, at these areas of light that we can stick to. And we believe that if it doesn't happen in my age, my children will be free. If I can't be free politically, I can be free psychologically. And maybe my children will be free also in the political manner as well in the future. And we help therapists also bring their patients to the same point where patients bring their full truth, bring their real selves. For example, when I was working with Israeli organizations, working with Palestinians, but through Israeli organizations, and many happen to do that because we live in Israel, Haifa, Nazareth, you know, it's inside Israel, so you have to work with Israeli organizations. We were always very much challenged by how we document the suffering of the Palestinians. We were very much overoccupied with the idea that if, as a therapist, I document too much information regarding my patient might face some consequences. Yes. Mm-hmm. We thought that if we document the real self, maybe there will be a negative consequences. But does that mean that we as therapists, we don't help the patient to bring their inner truth because our own threat, because our belief that we want to protect them? protecting a person will only happen if this person be free from their insides, okay? And we can't encourage false selves. And many years, there has been a brainwashing for therapists, Palestinian therapists, to help their patients be calm, you know, be relaxed. All this hypnosis techniques to be, you know, to react by actually helplessness towards the injustice. And now as therapists, we believe that the patient must have a free choice to react if they choose to bring their voices more loud. This is their choices. And as Palestinian therapists, we help them become more aware of their voices, and we make sure that we listen. If the international community does not listen, we, as a Palestinian community, we do listen to each other, and we give the meaning to the voices of our patients and our experience. And many times also, we are now very much aware that providing therapy by the perpetrator to the victim is not only unethical, it's also unprofessional. You know, it's like the rapist is the one to treat their victim. It's abuse. We believe that Palestinians should get, when they need therapy, should get therapy in their language by indigenous Palestinian therapists. Otherwise, it's abuse. It's unethical. Okay, maybe this is very strong to say, but along my 25 years of experience, I came to this truth. It's not only my individual truth. It's the truth of our collective voice as Palestinian therapists. We believe that we can help each other. We can help our Palestinian patients, okay, in real, to become real. That doesn't mean that we don't need the help of international community. International support is very much important, is very much respected. But only when this support is connected directly to the needs of the Palestinians, if the international community listen to the Palestinian voices and listen to our requests and then respond accordingly. Any projects that come from up down, you know, from the superiority of the West to the Palestinians, it's not, even if its aim was positive, if the intent was positive, still, we will refuse. We decided that we will refuse. Only if the Palestinian voices are heard, then the international support will be respected, and it is very much needed, actually. And nowadays, when we see all the huge suffering, the crimes that is taking place in Gaza, we need this international support to stop these crimes in Gaza, you know? So your voice as an international activist is very much needed nowadays. More than 33,000 Palestinians were killed in Gaza. Two-thirds of them are children and women. 70% of Gaza is destroyed, is totally destroyed. Starvation is everywhere. All hospitals of Gaza were destroyed. all 12 universities of Gaza was destroyed. All the dreams of millions are being stolen. And as we mourn the lives of those who paid a huge price of this crime, we hold their story. We will not forget them. And we are now their voices. We are here to stay, and we are here to call for help from the international community. First, to hold Israel accountable for its action, and second, to cease fire and end the war in Gaza immediately.
Thank you, Yoad. I can feel not only the really heavy emotions there, but your psychosocial human rights activist self and the strength that you exude. So thank you, Yoad. I have lots of internal feelings going on, and I'm wondering if you're okay to carry on with time, and if it's okay to ask a few more.
Yes. Yes. Fine. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I suppose we are going to carry on, but I just wanted, I suppose, to echo, like, Cesar, there's so much in what you just said. And I suppose one of the things for me, I was thinking about when we met, which might have been a few months ago, and the conversation we had now, and it feels like just how quickly things change, actually, and how you're speaking now, of course, goes back and is connected to the past, but there's also a lot that's happened in the last couple of months. And I think I was really sort of feeling that as well when you were talking. It's this the continuity, I suppose, was really with me about what you're living with and through.
Yes, of course, it makes me very much emotional. You know, there is a crime that is taking place live, broadcasted to the whole international community. And while we are talking now, hundreds are being starved, killed, and being captured in cold. And sometimes I think, what does that mean, that I practice mental health while my people are being killed? And this is a challenge that for us all as Palestinians and as therapists to find the meaning, to find the real meaning of our work. And sometimes when I speak to families, to children, and look at children from Gaza, those children that though they have been starved for months now, they choose to sing and they choose to play and they choose to read and they choose to answer my phone. I learn the Sumud from them and they give me the power, they give me the meaning. Those children gazes, they give me the meaning, because children are the capital of any community. And Israeli measures are meant to make this capital of us, our children, distorted, disformed, psychotic, sick. The attack is upon our future. And I find meaning by helping these children stick to their well-being and resist to this continuous abuse and attack upon their futurity. But we call for ceasefire and stopping the genocide that is taking place while we're speaking now. So our children have future.
Thank you so much, Yoad. And I know you were talking to the future there, and you're talking about, I suppose, the hopes that you've spoken about, the hope now and the importance of hope, but also moving on and looking forward. We always, yes, please. I was going to say, we always like to end our podcast around hope. So I don't know if there's something else that you'd like to share. It sounds like there is around that.
I think, you know, once they said the Western gaze, the Western Zionist gaze even, that Palestinian children believe in death. And a Palestinian child that throws a stone is a helpless child, a desperate child, a child that wants to die. But I believe that Palestinian children throwing stones have too much hope, not too much despair. Because they, in their naive way, they think that by throwing a stone, they will free themselves and free their homeland. So our Palestinian children, they are our voices of the future. They have more hope than we do. And we learn from them that a better future is on the way. But I believe we as adults, as adults, as international community, it is our duty to protect these children. I don't want our Palestinian children to presume hope by resisting. I want them to be only children, to sing and play and have a real life, normal life as any other child. I don't want our children to be heroes. I want our children to be children and to have lives as any other kid in the world. So it's our role as therapists, as international community, to open our closed rooms and do and have actions. We must take actions so that our children be protected and the future of us all as human beings, you know, not only as Palestinians. If you support the Palestinian cause, you are supporting justice, you are supporting humanity. So it's our role as adults, as human beings, to stand with Palestinians and to help free Palestine.
Thank you, Yoad. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your work and your hopes. It's been a really touching conversation, and I thank you so much. And I hope your family are safe. I hope your children are okay. I hope you get to safety.
Thank you so much, Yoad.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye bye.